हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जन श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 63, chapter 88, chapter 10. At the end of the performance of his Ashwamedha sacrifices, King Yudhishthira had asked the same question of Lord Krishna, who replied, "When I feel special compassion for someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the poverty-stricken man's children, wife, and other relations all abandon him. When he again tries to acquire wealth in order to win back his family's favor, I mercifully frustrate him so that he becomes disgusted with fruit of work and befriends my devotees. And at that time, I bestow upon him my extraordinary grace." Right? So for the devotees, then this process happens a little quicker, because the materialists, they lose everything, then try to get it back, then this, then eventually they turn to the devotees. Now, devotees in this, they may lose something, but immediately they'll be taking care of shelter of devotees, because that's all there is. Right? And so that's what's the whole point. Then one sees it in the proper light.
Mark? Hmm. This process we see sometimes it's very obvious how it happens to some devotees.
Right.
But some devotees it's not as obvious. I mean, it's not seen as such. So everybody has to go through it, or it depends?
It depends on what you have to learn. It means who has to take fever medicine?
The sick.
Yeah, who has a fever.
Right.
If he has a cold, he doesn't take it.
Right.
So it just depends upon what your position is. If you're attached to these things and wealth and family and all that works and that will make you happy, then that's where it goes.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then some other aspect will catch you. The point is wherever is your particular non-devotional element, that's the medium through which you'll get it. Or something related. You know, it's just like you have the example of you teach one person through explaining it to another.
Yes.
Yeah, like that. So then something related, so that you'll catch it. Is that
make
sense? Yeah. So it'll always be there. So whatever's the area, we get purified. And at that time, I bestow upon him my extraordinary grace, because he's already shown him his grace, but not extraordinary. Then he can become freed from the bondage of material life and attain to the kingdom of God. Right? Because so, the point is that we're trying for this little bit of wealth, and Krishna's taking that away, so we become frustrated, and then he's offering you the unlimited, position of being in the spiritual world. Like that. So you can see is that if you're looking at it from the greater perspective, then where's the loss? You know, it's like, what's his name? Dhruva Maharaj. He said, "I was looking for broken pieces of glass, and then now I found the diamond." Like that.
But Maharaj, more we know that process in advance, more it is easy to catch.
Yes, more it's catch, but we also, it's we know, but we also have to be trying for that. We have to be trying to see that we're using our wealth and everything. So even we know, if we don't try to do that, because as we were saying before, knowledge is important, but it's not actually the key point. Because with knowledge is the jnana shakti. Then what's the next? So you have jnana, kriya, and icha. So you have jnana shakti, you have knowledge. So what's the next step?
Kriya.
Kriya, you have to do something and get results to please Krishna.
Yes.
So if knowledge is just kept within its own thing, it doesn't get applied. So we hear this knowledge. That's the whole point of the manana.
Yes.
Is we hear this, then we try to apply that into our life. Am I using my wealth for Krishna?
Yes.
You know, am I using my facilities for Krishna? Why do I have wealth? Why am I endeavoring for the wealth that I have? Is it based on performance of prescribed duties? Because we see there's not a problem in people having wealth. Yudhishthir has, Sudama Vipra has, so many people have. But we also see it's not a problem if they lose it. Yudhishthir had it. They didn't have it. They got it. They lost it. They got it. They lost it. You know, it kept going back and forth. You know, so even there, just what they've lost, but how many times they've lost, you know. No one can say that they have 100, you know, cousin brothers trying to kill you, and they burn your house down, you know, like that. Then, you know, then you're in exile and all that for a while, and that. Then they fight with you over your wife, but you win. And then after that, they agree to give you half of the facility of the estate, but they give you the half that's absolutely useless. I mean, totally useless, right? They got it was bigger than that, but it had a name for that area. But that area had been cursed, so even animals didn't live there. Nothing was there, like that. That's the city. It's called Kuru Jungle. It had a particular name. So they got that because that's where the kingdom was before. But because they misbehaved, they got cursed by a sage, so they shifted to Hastinapur. And now this place was desolate. And so they went back there, right? And so that's what you're given. And then, after that, then it's like that one, what do you call it? We were reading. Can't remember. He went to the Gurukul. Then he didn't come back. He stayed extra time, so he thought he wasn't coming back. He was going to be Naistika.
Nabhaga.
And so then the brothers divided up all the wealth amongst themselves, didn't keep them a share. And when he got back, they said, oh, you can have our father as your share. Yeah, right.
His son became Ambarish Maharaj.
Yes. You know, so stuff like that. Then after that, you know, then they have a gambling match, take everything away again. You know, and you have to be exiled, live in the forest, and all these things like that. Then you come back again. Then they have a battle over it. You know, a world war, right? You know, not just, you know, a family feud. This is a world war. Then you get everything back again. And then after that, then Krishna leaves, so you go to the forest. So can anybody say they've gone through those stages? No. So that's why it's shown. But then you see others, then they go all the time. You know, it's like Kardama. He's a brahmachari, then he gets married, he has all the facilities, then he goes to the forest. So it's just the point is that you have used for Krishna, you don't have your absorption. So in other words, these are dealing with the negative. It's all happening today. that his first mercy deals with the negative, removes the negative. But his extraordinary grace, then that's developing the positive, or that affection for Krishna. Right? So by Krishna's grace, you give up the material attachment. But by his, you know, how you say, super excellent or extraordinary grace, then you develop an attraction to serve him. So we have to understand the two different things. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what was mentioned yesterday, is that if you're talking about removal of sin, like that, Naishkarmya is going to do that. So if you perform your activities without a desire for the result, right, that proper performance of duties and goodness, that will give you liberation. So whether you follow a more traditional, less traditional background, then the point is following that principle, you will get results. But then the problem comes is that how pure is it when one is still trying to cultivate and keep material attachments? And that's the definition why you're not following the tradition. So in other words, it may remove so much, but it won't actually fully get rid of them. So it's not that efficient. And because of that attachment, it still maintains that material position. How will that develop the positive or prema? Does that make sense? You know, so that's important to note. That's why then Baladeva Dibhusha and the Vedanta Shamantaka is making that point, is that what Shastra recommends, that's what's pious, that's what you do. And what it doesn't recommend, then that's what you avoid. So it's not a matter of some contemporary situations, it's about the eternal position of the scriptures. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva can each bestow or withhold favors. But whereas Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are satisfied or angered very quickly, Lord Vishnu is not. In this regard, the Vedic literature relates the following account. Once the demon Vrika asked Narada which god was most quickly pleased. And Narada answered that Lord Shiva was. Thus Vrikasura went to the holy place of Kedarnath and began worshipping Lord Shiva by offering pieces of his own flesh as oblations into the fire. But Shiva did not appear. So Vrika decided to commit suicide by cutting off his head. Just at that critical moment, Lord Shiva appeared from the sacrificial fire and stopped him, offering the demon whatever boon he chose. Vrika said, "May death come to whoever I touch upon the head with my hand." Right? Yeah. Better he didn't come, right? Yeah, whatever.
That is why he is known as Bhasmasura also. Bhasma means it becomes ash.
Ash. Oh, by touching someone's head, it becomes ash.
So Bhasmasura, Bhamasura, Banasura.
All the bees. Okay, yeah. All good friends. Belong to the bee club. And then there's the A Club, Ambarish Maharaj, Anjana Sutta, but like that, yeah.
Maharaj, this Vrikasur, like how we see in Krishna pastime is different. Vakasur and other demons, you know, they assumed a particular form. So Vrikasur over here, Vrika means wolf. So
Vrika means?
Wolf. So does he?
Wolf.
Has he assumed a form of a wolf?
Does Vrikasur have the form of a wolf? I have no idea. Anyone know? Maybe his mother liked wolves or something.
Mentalities.
Hmm? Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I wouldn't know. Lord Shiva was obliged to fulfill his request, and at once the wicked Vrika tried to test the benediction by putting his hand on the Lord's head. Terrified, Lord Shiva fled for his life, running as far as heaven and the outer limits of the mortal world. Finally, the Lord reached the planet of Swetadweep, where Lord Vishnu resides. Seeing the desperate Shiva from afar, the Lord disguised himself as a young student and went before Vrika. In a sweet voice, he addressed the demon, "My dear Vrika, please rest a while and tell us what you intend to do." Vrika was charmed by the Lord's words and revealed everything that had happened. The Lord said, "Ever since Lord Shiva was cursed by Prajapati Daksha, he's become just like a carnivorous hobgoblin. So you shouldn't trust his word. Better to test this benediction by putting your hand on your own head." Bewildered by these words, the foolish demon touched his own head, which immediately shattered and fell to the ground. Cries of victory, obeisances, and well done were heard from the sky. And the demigods, sages, celestial forefathers, and Gandharvas all congratulated the Supreme Lord by raining down flowers upon him. Shloka on a Sharanam. Summary of verses 1 to 13. An apparent contradiction of benedictions. 14 to 40, the story of Vrika. Verses 1 to 13. An apparent contradiction of benedictions. A contradiction of benedictions. King Parikit said, "Those demigods, demons, and humans who worship Lord Shiva, a strict renunciate, usually enjoy wealth and sense gratification, while the worshippers of the Supreme Lord Hari, the husband of the goddess Fortune, do not. We wish to properly understand this matter, which greatly puzzles us. Indeed, the results attained by the worshippers of these two lords of opposite characters are contrary to what one would expect." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. As a great devotee of Krishna, King Parikshit was already liberated. But for clarification, he was asking various questions of Sukadev Goswami. In the previous chapter, King Parikshit's question was, what is the ultimate goal of the Vedas? And Sukadev Goswami explained the matter, giving authoritative descriptions from the disciplic succession, from Sanandana down to Narayana Rishi, Narada, Vyas, and then Sukadev himself. The conclusion was that devotional service, or bhakti, is the ultimate goal of the Vedas. A neophyte devotee may question, if the ultimate goal of life, or the conclusion of the Vedas, is to elevate oneself to the platform of devotional service, then why is it observed that a devotee of Lord Vishnu is generally not very prosperous materially, whereas a devotee of Lord Shiva is found to be very opulent? In order to clarify this matter, Parikshit Maharaj asked, Sukadev Goswami, my dear Sukadev Goswami, it is generally found that those who engage in the worship of Lord Shiva, whether in human, demoniac, or demigod society, become materially very opulent, although Lord Shiva himself lives just like a poverty-stricken person. On the other hand, the devotees of Lord Vishnu, who is the controller of the goddess of fortune, do not appear very prosperous, and sometimes they are even found living without any material opulence at all. Lord Shiva lives underneath a tree or in the snow of the Himalaya mountains. He does not even construct a house for himself. But still, the worshippers of Lord Shiva are very rich. Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, however, lives very opulently, whether in Vaikuntha or in the material world. But his devotees appear poverty-stricken. Why is this so? Maharaj Parikshit's question is very intelligent. The two classes of devotees, namely the devotees of Lord Shiva and the devotees of Lord Vishnu, are always in disagreement. Even today in India, these two classes of devotees still criticize each other. And especially in South India, the followers of Ramanujacharya and the followers of Shankaracharya hold occasional meetings for understanding the Vedic conclusion. Generally, the followers of Ramanuja come out victorious in such meetings. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principle of material ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? So this goodness, passion, and ignorance then are within ego, because he's charged of the mode of ignorance. And so within ignorance, then you have ignorance and goodness, ignorance and passion, ignorance and ignorance. Or downright ignorance. So you have overall that people are in ignorance because they're within the material world. So that's what he's in control of. But then within that, then we see that there's three modes within this avidya. Right? So that's then he represents those three forms. Footnote 16. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 3 to Bhagavad Akramit Shimala, chapter 13, entitled Sadhana Bhakti Executed Exclusively by Taking Shelter of the Holy Name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book.
Like first, the material world is covered by ignorance. So Lord Shiva, as the master of material energy, is the overall in charge. Then again, within that, as a Rudra, he is in charge of Maharaj.
Means Krishna, Karana Daksha Shai Vishnu, then means with the Purusha avatars in the spiritual realm of Vaikuntha, then the mood of Krishna there is, I am God. Right? And so you have the eternal position. And so then they worship the Lord in all majesty there. Then the Purusha avatars would make them give them as a different mood, right? Because it's difference of moods than makes. Because otherwise, if it's the same mood, you don't call it different. Does that make sense? When Krishna goes home in Dwarka to 16,108 homes, it's still the same Krishna. Because the mood is the same. Does that make sense? But when he expands as Balaram, that's a different mood. So then you'll count a different category. Right? Vishnu Tattva, but you know. So the Purusha avatars, their mood is that of I'm the creator, I'm the maintainer, and I'm the destroyer. Because that's because you're dealing with material energy, so it being temporary, that's how it works. Right? So as the creator, then that's that mood is Hiranyagarbha. From that mood, then you get Brahma in the universe. Then he is the destroyer. Then that gives you Sadashiva, right? Then who then expands as Shambhu within the universe. And he's the maintainer. Then that is himself. And then he expands as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Who expands then as Kirudaksha. Because I think Kirudaksha is specifically the one who then is interacting and is on that level of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Right? So you have the original who is there, but they're non-different from him. Though different, but non-different. Then when you come into the world, the demigod, then you can say that they have that difference. But at the same time, is they're an expansion of the origin who's non-different, then that's why they are dear to the Lord.
This aspect is always brought out and addressed that the position of Lord Shiva because of that aspects of Lord Shiva. But we never hear much about Hiranyagarbha.
Because that's Brahma here, because that's a Jiva. Because Shiva is Shiva Tattva, so that's a transformation of Vishnu Tattva. So he's in a different category. He's actually superior to Brahma. But Brahma then will generally always be taken, that role will be taken by a Jiva. Shiva, generally it's not. If there's a Jiva who's so qualified that they can take that position, then they may, but it's not standard. You know, but Brahma, then it's the normal things that would be a Jiva. And if there is no Jiva, then Krishna will do. Like if there's no Indra or any post, then he'll take that post. So, yeah. So that's why you would probably not hear so much of that. But when he breathes out and creates, that's Hiranyagarbha. That has breathing out, that is maintained, that's as Vishnu. And that it'll be destroyed and he breathes back in, then that's Shiva. So yeah.
Maharaj, I don't understand why this verse, the third one, is connected with Abhideya. It's about the false ego question.
Means is that how do you get out of this world?
By developing bhakti.
Yes, and so that means you would have to give up the material.
Yes.
Right, and so then there's three kinds of false ego,
yes,
that you transform into I'm servant of Krishna.
Yes.
And so then by the Lord's grace one can give that up. So that's all part in the process of chanting the holy name. Then these would go away. The difficulty we mentioned the other day, I don't think you were maybe here, is that the Bhagavad Akramichi Mala then as a book that has the Sambandabhideya and Prayojana, and the Dasamul, and then it has further finer divisions as you know, finer details are given in Srimad Bhagavatam, of breakdowns of these sections. And so then he chooses verses from the Bhagavatam that explain this very nicely. And then in explaining it, then he puts these verses in a particular order. You know, so they're not according to where they appear in the book, they're according to where they add in and represent that particular tattva that's being explained.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when you read that order of verses, then it all makes sense. So there'll be verses before this and after this that will bring about the context of this verse. Mm-hmm. So some of them you can see directly because they'll be more the one that's being established, and others will be something that's supporting another point that's being made. Does that make sense? So sometimes then without the context they're not as well appreciated.
Yes.
Does that make sense? The 16 elements have evolved as transformations of that false ego. When a devotee of Lord Shiva worships his manifestation in any one of these elements, the devotee obtains all sorts of corresponding enjoyable opulences. Right? So, false ego then than is there. So you have these 16 elements. So depending on what it is, they take on, this one comes from goodness, this one comes from passion, this one comes from ignorance. Mm-hmm. So by worshiping the Lord in any of these elements, whatever they use, whatever the combination, then they'll get corresponding enjoyable opulences. So that means it's what you want, that's the one you worship with.
Yes.
Or that's what you're worshiping. Does that make sense? So you work in a particular area, then that's the area you get the results in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can see it's very mechanical.
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, replying to King Parikshit's inquiry, Sukadev Goswami said that Lord Shiva is the master of the material energy. The material energy is represented by Goddess Durga. And because Lord Shiva happens to be her husband, Goddess Durga is completely under his subjugation. Thus, Lord Shiva is understood to be the master of this material energy. The material energy is manifested in three qualities, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. And therefore, Lord Shiva is the master of these three qualities. Right? So he being the master of them, then that means is by giving up ignorance, then one can get out of the material world. So that will be part of what's, you can say, taking shelter of the holy name. We give up taking shelter of any of these 16 elements within, you know, like that. That makes sense. Although he is in association with these qualities for the benefit of the conditioned soul, Lord Shiva is their director and is not affected. In other words, although the conditioned soul is affected by the three qualities, Lord Shiva, being their master, is not.
Right. Hmm. We see sometimes Srila Prabhupada, he brings out this point that he's not affected. And sometimes he brings the point that he is affected because he deals with the mode of ignorance. So what's the situation that we deal with?
Means that you have, well, you can look at it, you have two aspects, that of Sadashi, who is never affected, and Shambhu, who can be affected. But generally he's not, because what's the natural position is naturally he wouldn't be, but sometimes he may be.
Yeah.
That makes sense? Because we have to remember, the material energy is his wife, so sometimes she doesn't kind of get control of the situation. Yeah. But his natural position is not to be like that. But that's a different thing that you're bringing out. Here, I think a different quality is being brought out on why Vishnu is supreme. But that also can be done, but I think that's in a different... Whether that'll come up here, but...
Because that's what Srila Prabhupada sometimes says, that Vishnu is never affected, but Brahma and Shiva
did, yes,
sometimes.
Yes. But it's but their being affected is on a different level than us. So, you know, that's the...
Yeah, when you were doing the pastime of Mohini Murthy,
the pastime of
Mohini Murthy, joining of the Mohini Murthy,
oh, okay.
Then we saw that Shiva was being affected by Mohini because that was a yogi.
But that Mohini is not the material energy.
Yeah, not the material energy.
But that's the internal potency.
That's the internal potency.
But she was talking about the external. You know, he's saying that he's in control of the material energy, and so he's never affected by the three qualities. So that was why Lord Shiva didn't feel bad, because he's still not affected by the material qualities. He's affected by the spiritual potency. From the statements of Sukadev Goswami, we can understand that the effects of worshipping different demigods are not, as some less intelligent persons suppose, the same as the effects of worshipping Lord Vishnu. Sukadev Goswami clearly states that by worshipping Lord Shiva, one achieves that one reward, whereas worship of Lord Vishnu, one achieves a different reward. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Those who worship the different demigods achieve the desired results the respective demigods can reward. Similarly, those who worship the material energy receive the suitable reward for such activities. And those who worship the Pitris receive similar results. But those who engage in devotional service or worship the Supreme Lord, Vishnu or Krishna, go to the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. One cannot approach the transcendental region or Paravyoma, the spiritual sky, by worshipping Lord Shiva or Brahma or any other demigod. Right? So again, just as in the previous discussions, they can't understand the position of Lord Vishnu and how he's, you know, above Brahman. So then, where will they put him? So they won't put him on the same level as Brahman, right? They'll put him below. And so below is also the demigod, so they'll just take him as one of the demigods. So it may be, he may be the most situated in goodness of all the demigods, so in that way you could say he's the superior of all the demigods. But at the same time, is they'll put him within the material context. And because of this, they can't understand his superior position. They'll just take it as, well, he gives different results. And so, like that. So it's just different, we see is that all these difficulties come up from not understanding Krishna's position. Since the material world is a product of the three qualities of material nature, all varieties of manifestations come from those three qualities. With the aid of materialistic science, modern civilization has created many machines and comforts. Yet they are only varieties of the interaction of the three material qualities. Although the devotees of Lord Shiva, right, so they're not something separate. It's not that we created something different and new and all that. And no, it's just working within the modes. The modes can produce this. That's what you can do. Does that make sense? You can only make something out of, you can do so much with something, but to the limit that the material nature allows. You know? Does that make sense? So that's what you can do. You can't do something beyond that. Right. Yeah. So it's like, can you make a supersonic jet out of styrofoam? Right. Generally not, because there's a limitation. But if you use, you know, some kind of high grade metal, you can. So it's just a matter of what you can do. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if you're shipping some stuff, do you pack it in titanium? No, you pack it in styrofoam. Right? That. Otherwise, or you should have amazingly good insurance. Right? So, it's not separate. It's still controlled by Lord Shiva. Because otherwise you'll think, okay, well, that's that, and we're doing something else. No, it's all controlled by him. It's controlled by his wife. He controls her. But Vishnu is above him. Although the devotees of Lord Shiva are able to obtain many material acquisitions, we should know that such devotees are simply collecting products manufactured by the three qualities. The three qualities are again subdivided into 16, mentioned in verse 4. Namely, the 10 senses, 5 working senses and 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the mind and the 5 elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. These 16 items are extensions of the three qualities. Material happiness or opulence means gratification of the senses, especially the genitals, the tongue, and the mind. By exercising our minds, we create many pleasurable things just for enjoyment by the genitals and the tongue. The opulence of a person within this material world is estimated in terms of his exercise of the genitals and the tongue. Or, in other words, how well he is able to utilize his sexual capacities and how well he is able to satisfy his fastidious taste for eating palatable dishes. Material advancement of civilization necessitates creating objects of enjoyment by mental concoction just to become happy. On the basis of these two principles, pleasures for the genitals and pleasures for the tongue, Herein lies the answer to King Parikshit's question to Sukadev Goswami as why the worshippers of Lord Shiva are so opulent. Right? So in other words, they're interested in material, they worship the Lord, they get material facilities that then they enjoy here and keeps them in the material world under the control of the three modes of nature. Because under the modes, they worship Shiva through these qualities under the modes to get the facilities that they will then under the modes that they'll enjoy under the modes. So in that way it actually has answered the question. While Lord Vishnu, the result of worshipping him is you go to the spiritual world. So there's no modes there. So we can see is that, you know, you give up one for the other. You know, that's how it works. So they're not interested in giving up the material world, so they get facility in the material world. And depending upon their position and their worship, then that will be opulence will be greater or smaller. But those who worship Krishna in the spiritual world, then the results they get is unlimitedly greater. So it's not that, oh, the Vaishnavas are so poor and the Shaivites are so rich. It's that compared to the riches that the Vaishnavas get, it can't compare. And even if you look at it in the process. Now, when the Shaivite is worshipping Lord Shiva in this particular way, is he not being austere and being controlling his life and engaging things and things are being spent and all this and that? He is. But it's for a very short time. And then he gets the material opulences that will be very short. Right? But the devotees of the Lord are worshipping, doing the same thing. It just may appear that austerity is the whole lifetime, because then they're going to get eternal life after that. So one can't complain. Right? Does that make sense? The devotees of Lord Shiva are opulent only in terms of material qualities. Factually, such so-called advancement of civilization is the cause of entanglement in material existence. It is actually not advancement, but degradation. Because the more you get involved, the more you get attached to it, the more you degrade yourself. Favors received from Lord Shiva are not actually beneficial to the conditioned souls, although materially such facilities seem opulent. Right? It's opulence, but it degrades you, so of what benefit they actually got.
You can say that it is connected with what we discussed in the end, that's the power of free will.
Yes. It means you can choose whichever you want, and you'll get that result. But because their free will, they've gone for the temporary, then they get in the temporary. And so those who want in the eternal, they get in the eternal. But that means it means just as you go for the temporary, you don't get the eternal. So those who go for the eternal aren't interested in the temporary. So they don't coexist. Does that make sense?
And this is a conscious choice.
A conscious choice, yes. Yeah, it's a conscious choice. Like that. And you can see, so many devotees have come from these, you know, Shaivite backgrounds, smarter backgrounds, and then in coming in contact with Krishna consciousness and looking at it, you know, in a you know, how you say, objective way, then they see the superior position, and then they become, you know, fixed in devotional service. Like that. So it's you do see that they, very rare you see it goes the other way. Like that.
We see that those who don't come from those backgrounds, it's perfectly coexist, the desire for material and the desire for spiritual. It's called Mishra Bhakti, kind of. And what the devotees miss.
There's a problem
point.
Here.
It is.
It means in this definition. That you say that they coexist, that's okay, but you say that they perfectly coexist. that's wishful thinking.
It seems like
one is hoping. Can't they perfectly? What, I mean, Prabhupada said you cooperate, that will please him, so then the spiritual desire, material, they cooperate. And then
it seems in others' lives that they perfectly coexist. Some other people.
In others' lives, yes. But unless you ask them. You know, as we mentioned before, is the rich person, his only satisfaction is that everybody else thinks he's enjoying. But otherwise, he's just as miserable as the common person. You know, in proportion to what he has. So everybody's getting basically the same kind of experience. And if not, it seems more. It just means that it was out of balance one way in last life, so it's out of balance the other way in this life, like that. But otherwise, if things are, you know, perfectly coexisting, then you'll see is that everybody's getting the same experience because it's material energy.
But I meant perfectly coexisting the aspirations.
The aspirations. Yes, but one will find that at a particular point in your development, they seem to go together, but why are they going together? Are the two connected or not? You said mixed devotional service. Yes. So is your material aspirations, are they connected to Krishna?
Yes.
That's where it becomes perfect. And so then it's progressive. But if any time they're not connected to Krishna, they won't be perfectly... yeah, you understand? They won't coexist. But there comes a point where one has to give up trying to use that process. You know, it's just like you have a process that you use for beginning something, but that process is not there in the end. You know, it's just like if you walk into the kitchen and it's a mess, right? But it doesn't stay a mess. You clean it, and then in that clean state, then you use. But that is like that in the beginning. It's not considered a problem. You know what I'm saying? So in the same way, in the beginning, we have material desires. We've come out of the material, you know, energy with that material consciousness. So naturally, there'll be so much material desire. But one dovetails, he connects it to Krishna. But at some point, it's not a matter of dovetailing. It's a matter of just using everything in Krishna's service because that's what you have. So you're just engaging what you have in Krishna's service. Like that. But in the beginning, it's more as yours, and at the end, it's more as Krishna's. But externally, it may not look any different. But it's the connection to Krishna that makes it perfectly work together. Because it's not actually material desire. It's just it following the scriptures and engaging your nature and facilities in Krishna's service. As long as it is separate, then they're not actually perfectly existing. But because spiritual is superior, as long as the junior is connected, it will work. Like that. You know, because all the activities we do, they're doing in the spiritual world. But the point is there, it's all connected to Krishna. Right? In other words, Mother Jashoda is cooking because of the connection to Krishna. She's not cooking just because she feels a little peckish and just, you know, wants a little snack. So she's going in and cooking something and then sitting down with Rohini and the others and just gossiping and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So. Yeah?
I came across Jiva Goswami. He categorizes very nicely regarding this aspect. Many times we get doubt, like karma is there, still is considered as a devotee. So he categorizes bhakti into three categories. First one is Aropa Siddha Bhakti, which means that he performs his material activities but is giving the result to Krishna. That's why it's bhakti.
Okay.
Next one is Sadhana Siddha Bhakti, which means he's performing bhakti mixed with karma and jnana.
Okay.
This is the basic mixed devotional service. Then there is the Swarupa Siddha Bhakti, within which there are parts. It may be Akinchana Bhakti or it may not be. But it is considered in Swarupa Siddha Bhakti because he is not mixing bhakti with karma and jnana. But he as a person may be falling because of his old habits. But he doesn't perform, he doesn't mix the bhakti with
karma and jnana.
Karma and jnana.
Okay.
So there he gives examples of the third canto where Kapila Muni describes bhakti in a mode of ignorance, passion and goodness.
Okay.
The person may be in passion, ignorance and goodness, but he doesn't mix his bhakti which is performing
with those.
With those.
Okay. But there still may be some distraction due to that.
Yes.
Okay. You know, it's just like, say, Bharat Maharaj.
Yes.
Because as a king, he protects citizens. So here's a deer with no protection, so he protects.
That was also his categories in
that. Okay, so like that. Okay, that would also then bring that in the Bhav Sadhana, that you're acting according to what is your external form, but you haven't necessarily come to the platform of prema. So we can see probably within the Sarup Siddha Bhakti that there's levels. Akinchana Bhakti is then prema.
Yes.
Okay, so you have Aropya Siddha, then Sadhana Siddha, Sarup Siddha, and?
Within the Sarup Siddha.
Then you have that.
Akinchana and below. Within the Sarup Siddha, Akinchana Bhakti is prema Bhakti.
Okay, and then there'll be levels within the other. Yeah, so there'll always be. Okay. That made sense?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Yes.
I'm thinking also that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in analyzing all the levels of bhakti in Madhurya Kadambini, he says that not up until the level of nishta, the material desires, whoever is practicing Krishna consciousness, lower than below nishta, their material desires are still very strong. He categorizes this as very strong.
Okay.
And attachment to Krishna, it's minimal.
Right.
But then at Nishta, it's somewhat, the attachment to matter is still strong. Not very strong, but strong.
Right, right.
But then the practitioner is able to steadily practice Krishna consciousness. So his attachment to Krishna is also quite good.
Okay.
So that's the turning point. After that, if we want to move up,
then you have to get taste.
Yeah, we can balance
the two. Yeah, because taste means then these just go away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And who are you quoting?
Jiva Goswami.
Jiva Goswami. Okay.
Small correction. The second one is Sangha Siddha, not
Sangha Siddha.
Sangha Siddha. Second.
Okay. So Aropya Siddha, Sangha Siddha, and Swarup Siddha. Yeah, so it's just taking different angles of the same kind of thing. Is that is there, but there'll be some aspect of karma. Aropya Siddha doesn't mean, oh, there's karma gyan there, but Aropya Siddha is not. Aropya Siddha is only karma gyan, but it's connected to Krishna. The result's given, so therefore it becomes nice. So sometimes we may forget, but when we do remember, we connect it. Like any devotee, they may be distracted, but you discuss, they'll remember Krishna, they'll connect it. But that aropya just means you take what you're interested in and then overlay that onto bhakti. You know, like we described, we're attached to the material energy in a particular way, and then we overlay that onto bhakti and say that it's the same as the Sangha Siddha or Swarup Siddha and all these other things. So it's not. It was within devotional service, and it's part of the process, but one can't say that they're equal. That should never be said. They're different. Right? Because you're taking my attachments and then trying to make that into a process. And it's part of the process, but it's called, in this category, Aropya Siddhi. And so that means there's so many anartas. So Aropya Siddhi is guaranteed it is a neophyte. Right? Now there may be elements of that still left within the Madhyama, but it's a matter of association and trying to be there situated. It's Krishna, the attachment to Krishna has become more strong. The attachment to material energy is an identity, and that is left. But by habit and that, they may still do. Right? That then it'll get farther where then that what do you call it? Sarup. Sangha, and then Sarup. Sarup, then they actually understand their position as servant of Krishna, but it still may have some flavor as before, as we mentioned. There's a fragrance of this. So there'll be an overlap between, I would expect, the Madhyama up through until akinchan, until prema. And you just see it's getting less and less and less. So there's a taste, then there's an attachment, then there's the ecstasies, and then the ecstasies is that then you're absorbed in the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, to where then you're qualified to take part in the pastimes. So that's called Swarup Siddhi. You may have your Swarup, that's the problem. Some generally it's said that then you get Swarup Siddhi means you have your form. That's not Swarup Siddhi. That's called Swarup. Swarup Siddhi is now when you're able to engage your form in Krishna's pastimes within the actual pastimes. You're accepted into that. That's Swarup Siddhi. But it's not Vastu Siddhi. So when you come to the point of prema or akinchana bhakti, now that's Vastu Siddhi. So then you inherit what is naturally yours. Means that love for Krishna in that particular form. Does that make sense? So you have these gradations. They're taking different aspects. That's why they have different titles. They overlap, but sometimes it's not that they're just exact, line for line matches. Because they're taking these, just like Prabhupada says, advanced devotional service starts from Madhyama, from the Nishta. So then you're taking it, Nishta, Bhava, and Prema. These are advanced devotional service, but there's a difference as gradations. Right? Then there's, the neophyte. So you're looking at it that way. But then you look at it another way, then you're going to see them in a different kind of perspective. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So all of these are to give you an appreciation, understanding of how to move forward. So for the one, means that it's all about, on all of them, it's about how much Krishna is the center or not. Mm-hmm. So aropya means you're the center, and you're including Krishna. Mm-hmm. right? Then the Sangha Siddha basically it's about Krishna, but at the same time you still have your desires and this and that, and you know sometimes it'll be you know more Naishkarmya, sometimes less. So you know you'll be going back and forth between the element of sannyas and renunciation. Well, then you'll see in Sarup Siddha, then that will basically all be sannyas, but it doesn't mean that there's not some effect from the previous conditioning. And they're not dependent upon where you are. A sadhaka can still be in Sarup. You know that, what do you call it?
Sarup Siddha Bhakti.
Sarup Siddha Bhakti. That, through that, he's already doing. But in any case, we know that will start at the earliest from the Madhyam platform.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it just depends upon how it's going. But we know you have to go through these stages.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
In the Sarup Siddha level, we'll be having different subcategories into it.
Every level you can make subcategories.
Mm-hmm. Which will go up to Prema.
Yes, but Sarup will have probably the widest range.
Mm-hmm.
The Aropya will be the narrowest, because mm-hmm. it just means what are your desires, your values, you're going to do that anyway, but you're going to connect it to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly freed from the material modes. So, you see, as he's not affected by the modes, and worshiping him, you also become not affected by the modes. Lord Shiva may be above the modes, he's not controlled by them. But at the same time, by worshipping him, you only get results within the modes. So in other words, there's a difference between the two. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, there are two kinds of prakritis, or potencies, namely the internal potency and the external potency. And Krishna is the overlord of both. He is Sarvadrik, or the overseer of all the actions of the internal and external potencies. And he is also described as Upadrashta, the supreme advisor. Because he is the supreme advisor, he is above all the demigods, who merely follow the directions of the supreme advisor. As such, if one directly follows the instructions of the Supreme Lord, as inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, then one gradually becomes nirguna, or above the interactions of the material qualities. To be nirguna means to be bereft of material opulences, because, as we have explained, material opulence means an increase of the actions and reactions of the three material qualities. So someone who's absorbed in Krishna also doesn't mind having less stuff. You know, if we're talking about the thing of reduction of opulence, because we see that many have, but we're talking here about that phenomena where the opulence is reduced. They don't have a problem with it. Why? Because more opulence means more reactions and reactions of the material modes. So there's much more involvement. It takes up so much more time and emotions and energies and intelligence and all that. So they don't mind either. Does that make sense? Because they're focused on Krishna, so it doesn't bother.
In the Vanashram Dharma means it is advised to go with less opulence.
Yes, means you reduce, because in any case you're going to start off with reduced as a brahmachari,
yes.
Then you're going to increase as needed for the grihastha ashram, yes. Then vanaprastha you reduce again, and then sannyas even further.
Yes.
Right? Because the grihastha may have some facilities, the vanaprastha may have some facilities, but they're his facilities. You know, he has his hut, he has his this, he does like that. But then we see is that then he'll have that facilities to do his yajnas and all the different things, or he's there with the wife and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes into sannyas, where then they may live in a hut, but now they're not making the hut.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The family has arranged that hut.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be there where they don't have any contact. The other one, then they may have contact. Vanaprasthas, they deal with the family members, it's not a problem at all. But the sannyasi starts to reduce all that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that just how much is you know appropriate and like that, but at the same time is then he's living in their hut, but eating their food, then he's living in their hut and going and begging, then he gives up the hut and goes out. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the idea is like what you're saying is that renunciation of the material world is the natural anyway, even for those who are within the modes of nature and want to enjoy the material energy. But vanaprastha, they have to do that anyway. I mean, varnashram, they have to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But we may see within that within the grihastha ashram or, you know, these different positions that, or, you know, any in the varnashram, that you might see that the followers of Lord Shiva might have more opulence per se. Like if you go to Kumbh, not all. Yeah, depends on what they are. But you even see is that when it comes to opulence, the Shaivite sannyasis generally have more opulence than the Vaishnav sannyasis. You know, then you have the Tyagis who have nothing. They walk around their kopans or even less, and they might be Shaivites also. But that's a particular determination, like that. But, But it's just that because they're worshipping Shiva, who's controlling the material energy, they don't mind keeping more material stuff, and they're quite comfortable, because technically they're not actually going to get out of the material world. So, you know, what's the problem? Right? Since you're here, you might as well get comfortable, right? You know? But for the Vaishnavs, they're trying to get out. That's why they may have a reduced amount of facility, even as Grihasthas, or any of the ashrams, but you know, you won't notice it as much in the other three, but you'll notice it more in the Grihasthas. Like, the people are complaining there.
Yes, yes.
You know, they're not complaining that, you know, why I don't have, you know, as a brahmachari, more facilities and all that, and like that. So as a Grihastha, but it's reducing so that one does not have that attachment to the position. Well, the Shaivite, he's totally attached to the material position. You know, his money, his family, his house, his position in society, all that, he's totally attached to that. Well, the Vaishnav's not. So if there's some reduction, it just helps. And if they are attached, then by their reduction, then they will turn to Krishna. Right? While with the Shaivite, let's say he loses some opulence, he'll turn to Shiva for more opulence. But the Vaishnav, when then they lose this opulence, they'll turn to Vishnu to surrender to Krishna. And even if he doesn't, he still turns to that, then Krishna will still do it in such a way that you'll get your result, but in such a way that now you're not interested. You know, it's just like, let's say, for example, an example of this, Chitraketu. Right? He got his son. Right? But he got his son in such a way that then he died. And then, you know, that kind of takes a bit of the steam out of the whole, you know, that materialistic drive. There. Then, you know, he's lamenting and he wants his son back and all that and all that. So then Narad Muni then brings his son back. But in a way that then he even loses attachment there. It's quite cool. When the son comes back, it's not like, oh, dad, this, that. It's like, who are you? I'm your father. Like, which one? I've had millions of them. So which one are you? Remind me again. Yeah, so then you see. Then after that, then he, you know, then became detached from this whole kind of scene. So Krishna arranged it in such a way that in the detached, in the reduction, you actually become detached. Well, Lord Shiva, his arrangement, you're just becoming more and more attached. So you can see this very, very difference in the what you're gaining. So one, you're gaining the spiritual world, devotional service in the spiritual world. The other, you're just material entanglement. Like that.
The devotee, if Karmi comes to devotional service, he has an X amount of opulence, money. But when he becomes a devotee, he is akinchana. So his consciousness that I own this is lost. So he has become without anything.
Yeah, he's become without, even though he has. But the point is he'll end up with nothing, right? Whether he has everything but doesn't identify with it, it's still not his, it's Krishna's, so he has nothing. Yeah. Or he thinks it's his and Krishna takes it away so that he doesn't have anything, so then he can be a kinshana. In any way, you're going to become a kinshana. And you can say, okay, I'll become a kinshana and keep all the stuff, but by saying that means you're not a kinshana. That's why then you won't have all the stuff. And those who have all the stuff and are a kinshana, whether they have it or they'll lose it, it doesn't matter to them, as we see with all these great personalities. Parikshit Maharaj has the whole kingdom and he gives it up. You know, Yudhishthira Maharaj has the whole kingdom, they all go to the forest many times. You know, so like that is, that's a kinshana. You know, if it's there, they use it for Krishna. If it's not there, they use whatever they have. Yeah, so good point. Because the mentality changes.
Another thing is that when people start to become rich, the first thing that they get is a bodyguard to protect themselves from all the attacks. We look at the so-called rich worshippers of Lord Shiva, Banasur, Ravan. They got a bodyguard which in the end failed them, Lord Shiva. He didn't help them, but a so-called poor person like Prahlad Maharaj, he got the best bodyguard service in the universe. So what is the use of having all of that money if you're going to get killed and your bodyguard's unreliable and all your money can't buy that super infallible bodyguard? But with Prahlad Maharaj, you got an infallible bodyguard service.
Yeah, good point. Interesting point. Now, just as from the earlier conversation, that's how to use the clever intelligence to come up with all kinds of amazing kind of stuff. That's the way. Does that make sense? Not to distract the... Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.